Now, the Ian Jessup Show.
For 77-year-old Bill Cosby, he's gone from TV dad to an accused sexual predator. Some of the charges date back more than 30 years, and he's denied some of the allegations and refused to discuss others. Joining us to talk about the legal aspects of this case and the differences between Canadian law and American law is Victoria criminal lawyer Paul Pearson. Thanks for coming in, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
At least 15 women are speaking out to various media outlets accusing Cosby of sexual misconduct, which alleges that they were drugged and then raped. As a lawyer defending a case like this, how do you prepare for something like that?
It's a challenge. And part of the reason is that when allegations like this are old, they become difficult for everyone. They're difficult for prosecutors because witnesses' memory fades with time. You lose physical evidence. You lose things like, you know, video footage, recordings. Those sorts of things get lost or replaced or taped over. And you just generally lose a lot of your case. On the other side, if you're defending a case, sometimes you feel like you're shadow boxing, because if an allegation is a broad one that's from 30 years ago or 20 years ago, and the person says, look, I can't remember where I was before, what I had for lunch that day, or, you know, what was on the TV at the time, because it was 30 years ago. But what I can say is he sexually assaulted me. And as human beings, we say, fair enough. They're not going to remember, you know, what exactly was they did that day, where they were going, who they talked to afterwards. And those sorts of details are exactly the kind of thing that a defense lawyer is going to use as the sort of cross-examination method for testing the validity of a claim like this. So if you just kind of have that thing sitting out there saying, well, yeah, he sexually assaulted me at the pool and that was what happened, sometimes it's really hard to actually cross-examine a witness over that, because what we actually use as tools are, does your version of events line up with other things we know to be facts? You know, what was actually happening that day, where you went, who you were with, what was going on, those sorts of things. And when it's old, you just sort of lose some of those details. So the old cases are hard for the prosecutor and they're hard for the defense. From the defense perspective, you're going to take a witness very carefully through their evidence from start to finish and from finish to start, and make sure that anything that sticks out as being inconsistent with other pieces of evidence that you have, or, as we say, is inconsistent with human experience, is another thing we're looking for. So if something just doesn't sound right, we're going to follow up with that and carefully examine it. And so those are some of the things that you do those in every case. Yeah. But where there's an old case, it's even more difficult, because sometimes what you've got is a person on the stand who's telling a story, and that's the only piece of evidence. And so if you don't, you know, do a good job pressing the validity of that statement, you're liable to lose the case.
I mean, it's very difficult to remember what happened 30 years ago.
It's virtually impossible to happen, to remember everything.
Yeah.
And that's one of the realities that the legal system struggles with, is people's memory is actually really quite poor. We remember. It's a very complicated process how we observe things happening. We process it going into our memory. It sits there. It fades over time. We process it coming out of our memory, and then we articulate it, usually through speech.
Because you and I can witness an event, and we can have two different versions of what happened, can't we?
Yeah, that's very true. And eyewitness identity, saying this is the person that robbed the bank, is renowned. And if you look at SFU, has done a lot of good work in their criminology department studying how people remember things, how good they are remembering them. And the two rules are, people aren't really that good at remembering visual details. They like to paint their own story in their minds. The other, perhaps more troubling thing, is they're really sure that they're right when you ask them what happened. They don't want to admit that they actually don't remember things and that they've actually painted their own picture. Now, I want to hasten to add here that this sort of uncertainty about details, what color was the car that sped around the corner, what color was the shirt that the robber was wearing, those sorts of things people are really quite poor at. What people generally don't do, though, is misremember the fact that, you know, somebody sexually assaulted them. So it's not like that's going to fade with time.
And yeah, absolutely.
That is actually, people will often say, you know, those sorts of traumatic events are burned in. And so what happens is you'll have a witness who will say, I can't remember what I was wearing, where we were even. I don't know if we were at a restaurant or in a bar or wherever it was, but this happened. And so the legal system has to struggle with that. On the one hand, it can't just say, well, someone can just march forward and say, well, 30 years ago, this person did this to me. I can't really remember a lot of details, but I'm really sure it happened. We can't say as a society, well, we're just going to chuck somebody in jail on the basis of that every time, because you have to test it. But on the other hand, you can't say to people who've had something horrible happen to them 30 years ago, well, too bad. Sorry, it's been too long. We can't press charges.
And there's no question that it may have happened. But if you're sitting on a jury, you have to have a complete faith that it did happen without reasonable doubt.
And that's really, really important to remember, because we often view these types of cases, you know, when big criminal cases are in the media, we kind of view it as offender or accused versus victim or complainant, right? That it's mm-hmm. one versus the other. We really have to put our minds to the fact that this is the state, the society, saying we're going to punish someone criminally. So do we have enough evidence to satisfy ourselves that this is something we want to do? And unfortunately, human history has a long saga of misusing criminal law powers, people being jailed for all sorts of bad reasons. So we've developed a system saying, look, if this isn't proven beyond a reasonable doubt, we just don't convict people. In Mr. Cosby's situation, which seems to be changing every day, and there's more and mm-hmm. more people coming forward, one of the interesting things that is at play for as far as Canadians looking at it go is, what's surprising is in the U.S., they have different criminal systems in each state. So most of these things happened the allegations are arising around in New York. They have a different set of laws surrounding time limits surrounding criminal charges and lawsuits.
Statute of limitations?
That's exactly it. So in B.C. and every jurisdiction, we have laws surrounding, you can't bring up something that happened 20 years ago. You say somebody smashed into your car and now I'm going to sue you over it. We say, look, people need to have closure. Evidence needs to be fresh. We need to have, sort of a final date when you can file something. For most things mm-hmm. in British Columbia, it's 2 years. If you have a car accident or there's a personal injury, somebody, you know, pushes you over in a staircase or something, you have 2 years to sue. And if you don't, too bad.
What about a case like, go ahead.
Excellent question. These cases, though, we've made a special change. And in our Limitation Act, which is our statute of limitations, it's called mm-hmm. the Limitation Act, it specifically says, these limitations don't apply to allegations of sexual assault. So if someone wants to sue someone for sexual assault in British Columbia, it doesn't matter if it's been 2 years, 10 years, or 20 years, you're not going to find that your time limit expired. In the U.S., it varies state to state, but in many locations, there are limitations on these things. So my assessment is many of these allegations, if not most of them, are going to end up with no one being able to sue Mr. Cosby because the time has just elapsed. I think in New York, it's 5 years is their limitation period for this sort of thing. Also, for criminal charges, where that's the police investigating him and determining if they're going to charge him with something, mm-hmm. they're not going to get out the door either, because unlike Canada, and I'll say in Canada, there is no limitation period for serious criminal charges. Doesn't matter if it happened last year or 20 years ago, you're going to get charged if there's a case there. And in the U.S., they've made a different decision, and in many jurisdictions, there are limitation periods of 3, 4, 5 years for criminal allegations. So they just have a different system there where they've said we need finality. I think it stems partially because some of these limitation periods have to do with whether or not the state can get in there and muck around in your private affairs. And the mm-hmm. Americans are big believers in the state, stay out of my business. And if you want to try to prosecute me, you better do it in a timely manner. And so they've got these limitation periods. So the reality in this situation is if someone like Mr. Cosby had allegations like this that arose in British Columbia, there would be no time limit. They could bring it up. Charges, some of these allegations date back to the 60s. They could bring them up, and if there was evidence there, they could prosecute. Where, depending on where it comes from in the States, it looks like most of these allegations, because most of them are at least 10 years old, they're just, nothing's going to happen as far as the litigation side of things. The court of public opinion, course, has no limitation period. And
that's right.
You know, it's coming out every day that there's more and more allegations arising.
Is that why we don't hear the police or prosecutors talking about an investigation of these incidents? And that's why Cosby has not commented on them. He's just kept quiet.
In some ways, it's interesting in that you're right. The police aren't saying. We've had cases recently, you'll recall, with Mr. Gomeshi's allegations that arose. Toronto police came out pretty quick and said, hey, we're going to investigate this thing. And the Ontario Police Department or Police Force said, we're investigating this. If you've got information, come to us. And that's because there's no time limit. It doesn't matter if it's 5, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. They're investigating. Now, I don't know what the American authorities are doing. I don't have any secret view of what their attitude is. But in most of these situations, it appears they're going to be what we call statute barred, meaning time limits elapsed. You can't do anything about it. So there isn't much for the police to do. They can still, the Americans are big fans of bringing people together and bringing in investigations and having people testify. And if they lie during that investigation process, charging them with that. Listeners will recall Clinton, of course, was the impeachment process in theory wasn't because he'd been unfaithful to his wife. It was because he'd, in theory, lied about it during a discovery process. So the Americans are big believers in that. If someone were to have some method of questioning Mr. Cosby, they could try to bring something up in that fashion. And I, you know, depending on what happens in the U.S., that's possible.
Is that what they call a grand jury?
So the grand jury would be in the American version of what we have in Canada, which is called a preliminary hearing. And the grand jury in the States is a method by which they have a secret process that's done only with a prosecutor. There's no defense lawyer and there's no judge there.
Public's not allowed.
It's in secret. We call it in camera, which means in secret. So it's an in camera or in secret hearing where they'll call witnesses. And the idea is, in the U.S., it dates back to days when they say, look, we don't want the government using criminal law prosecutions to single out people and to basically oppress them. And we know of that sort of thing, that this sort of stuff happens in other countries. In Russia, for instance, the criminal charges are often brought to bear against opposition leaders and other people who are protesting. And the Americans, when they were thinking of their system, said, we want to prevent the government from doing that. So the grand jury is a way of saying, if there isn't enough evidence and a grand jury, this is just a regular jury of 12 people like any other jury trial, if they're not satisfied that there's probable cause to believe that the offense happened, then the charge gets chucked out. In practice, the grand juries almost always rubber stamp charges, and they will effectively, they don't have to give reasons why they make their decision. The hearing's in private. Their reasons are in private. It's basically just a yes or no. And significantly, it's just the prosecutor who's presenting evidence to them.
Not private citizens on a jury?
They're private citizens on the jury. So the grand jury would be just private citizens. They would be, like we would have any jury trial, that would be members of the public.
Yeah, my cell phone is ringing. So we're talking to Victoria criminal lawyer Paul Pearson. We'll take a commercial break and come back.
Email talk at cfax1070.com. It's the Ian Jessup Show. With Al Farabee.
Legendary broadcaster Jim Robson joined us remembering Pat Quinn.
People say, oh, he didn't win the Stanley Cup. Well, so what? There's a lot of players and people in the Hall of Fame who've never won a Stanley Cup. And he went to the Stanley Cup final twice. He's devoted as much of his life to hockey, and he certainly deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
On the next show, we'll talk to world-class swimmer Ryan Cochran, and we'll preview this weekend's Santa's Light Parade.
Mornings with Al Farabee. Weekdays 5 to 9 on CFAX 1070.
You've read Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, but you've never experienced it like this. Join Maestro Timothy Hankowitz, actor Kelt Eccleston, and soprano Evelyn Delahaye and the Victoria Symphony for A Sentimental Christmas Carol, a special and entertaining partnership of orchestra and actor, December 12th, 13th, and 14th at the Royal Theatre. For a night of wonderful Christmas music and a literary Christmas classic, don't miss A Sentimental Christmas Carol. For tickets, call the Victoria Symphony box office or visit victoriasymphony.ca.
For over 140 years, Velvoline has helped engines run better, from Detroit, Michigan to Dog River, Saskatchewan. Hi, it's Brent Butt from Corner Gas. Corner Gas the movie is in theaters December 3rd to 7th. Visit VelvolineMoviePromo.com for a buy one, get one free movie ticket offer and get a chance to win Corner Gas the movie merchandise. Hey, you're going to love Corner Gas the movie. They're even talking about it in Woolerton. Valvoline, over 140 years under the hood. No purchase necessary. For details, go to ValvolineMoviePromo.com. Contest closes December 14th, 2014.
Here's to Black Friday surprises. The surprise of lining up in a polar vortex, and the surprise of seeing the guy who got the last parking spot also get the last gift you wanted. So this year, instead of surprise, get delight at the Lincoln Black Friday event. From November 27th to December 1st, get a $750 bonus on 2014 Lincoln models. Plus, eligible customers can also get an extra $1,000 bonus. The Lincoln Black Friday event ends December 1st. For details, visit a Lincoln retailer.
Have you been living with a water entry problem in your basement or crawl space? Have you been reluctant to deal with it because you saw the mess and heard the cost next door at your neighbor's? Well, Earth Service Drain Master has been solving water entry and drainage problems economically for 32 years. Trust our drainage team to restore, repair, or renew your existing system back into working condition. Call Earth Service Drain Master at 250-479-0195. We will be glad to arrange a visit and assess your problem.
They don't just give you the Grey Cup at the end of the season. You gotta earn it. But the climb is treacherous. The grind will break many. And some may just give up. But the few willing to fight through the pain and sacrifice will become champions.
Right, let's go, baby!
Witness the rise of a champion. The 102nd Grey Cup from BC Place. Sunday, November 30th. Only on TSN.
Silent but deadly. Whatever you do, do not let it get on your roof.
You won't ever have to worry about moss growth again. Give your roof its best defense against moss growth with Thompson Roof Treatment. Thompson's exclusive program will ensure that your cedar or asphalt roof is free of moss. Treat your roof with Thompson Roof Treatment every 2 to 3 years, and you'll also be protecting your roof's warranty. Moss, it's lurking out there, and it must be stopped. Call Thompson Roof Treatment, 385-3124.
Informative talk. Now, the Ian Jessup Show.
Welcome back. Paul Pearson is our guest, Victoria criminal lawyer. We're talking about some of the issues facing Bill Cosby, who is 77 years old, and Gian Gomeshi. And Deborah has an email here. She says, so why would these women wait until now? Would love to see some time limits on timelines here. This is preposterous. Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah, it's a really good question, because in the U.S., they've made that decision and said, look, we're not going to let people bring this stuff up 20 years later. In Canada, we obviously haven't allowed that to occur. Part of the policy reason in Canada why we don't have limitation periods for allegations, specifically for sexual assault allegations, is there are many reasons why a woman might not come forward with an allegation like this. As a defense lawyer, I'm bound to say, because sometimes it didn't happen. That's a legitimate concern in these types of cases. The tough thing, as I always say about sexual assault cases, is there's tons of it going on in the community that's unreported, that's happening, where people who are walking away free without any call to police. Unfortunately, there also are people who are innocent, who are before the courts, who are in a situation where someone's made a false claim against them. And so we have to be very careful balancing that.
Mm-hmm.
But the statistics from Stats Canada are, you know, somewhere between 80 and 90% of sexual assaults go unreported. And the question that's often asked is, well, why? Why didn't you call the police? Why didn't you do anything? And the answer is, unfortunately, as a society, we still stigmatize women who are victimized by sexual assault. Rape victims are often re-victimized.
Yeah.
And I will say, I get somewhat defensive because we often talk about the courts re-victimizing them, and they're re-victimizing the trial process, and that occurs. And it's a hard process, but that process is focused on whether or not the state should punish someone. I think the bigger challenge is that, and so the limit, you know, the processes there are important. The bigger challenge, I think, is that as a society, we still haven't kind of gotten around to saying, okay, if someone says, look, I was sexually assaulted, we're going to support them. We're not going to be stigmatizing them. And unfortunately, women will often feel this. They'll feel shame. They'll feel embarrassment. They'll feel self-blame. It's all those things that cause women to just suffer in silence. In some situations as well, if it's not a, you know, a full-on rape, sexual assault, if it's just something that's sort of an aggressive date or something else where there is, you know, some of this less serious sexual conduct, women will often think, well, you know, this is just a bad date. I'm just going to get out of here and I'll just kind of leave it alone. then they hear, okay, this guy's doing this to other people, and then they say, well, look, I'm not going to let him get away with that. He did that to me too, so I'm going to add my voice to the chorus. And that's, I think, why a lot of the time when we see these cases and someone comes forward, women feel empowered to say, look, I can come forward too. I have a voice. And they can also say, look, I don't want him to get away with it, so I'm going to add my voice.
Yeah, he did it to me, so I'm not going to let him do it to others.
That's right. Yeah,
exactly. We have about 6 minutes left. I want to ask you about Gion Gomeshi and some of his problems. When he was first charged with the sexual allegations, he filed a $55 million lawsuit against the CBC, and we had a discussion here at CFAX on whether you could file a lawsuit against your employer. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, the answer is pretty clear. It's one of the rare times when the law is actually pretty black and white, and that is if you're a union member, your route to a remedy, if you've got a problem, is to grieve it with your employer and go to arbitration. It's not to go to court. You've given up the right to go to court for in what we call an employment law case if you're in a union in the vast majority of situations. So for someone like Mr. Gomeshi, that was much of the commentary coming out, was that a lawsuit like this would just be limited by the statutes that would be at play in Ontario, and they would say, you can't sue. Mm-hmm. Your route to get compensation is to go through the union process. So when it was originally filed, there was a lot of discussion about why you might do this. And one of the issues with a lawsuit is you file a document that sets out the allegations. Here's what I say happened. Here's why I want my money, that sort of thing. And we call it at various names, but a statement of claim or a writ of summons. So when that's filed, it's immune to any claims of defamation, libel, slander, that sort of thing. You can say whatever you want when you file lawsuits, and no one can ever sue you on that. And it's a way to kind of get a side of a story out for some people. That's one potential motivation that people will do in filing these things. And I know that was the CBC's view, was they brought an application in court to say this is an abuse of process. That you're not trying to get money, you're trying to use the court's processes for some other goal, and there's an oblique or side motive here. And it's interesting. You advised me today that he just pulled his lawsuit.
Pulled it this morning.
Yeah. Yep. So that's interesting news, and I think that it certainly spells the end of that.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Ian. The term sexual assault bothers me. In our society, all of a sudden, it can mean a tap on the derriere or rape. And if it's rape, say it, because there's a great difference. And in the Gomeshi case, if these women have agreed to S&M, I would think it would be very, very difficult. And I guess that's the conclusion they came to. But and of course, if he had sued the CBC, he would be suing us taxpayers, since we pay over $1 billion a year for the CBC. But I feel...
Well, you know, Barbara, you raise an interesting point, because remember in the election in the 80s where John Turner, the Liberal leader, patted the lady on the rear end? And that today would be considered sexual assault.
Well, that's ridiculous. Because there is a great difference. And this society has a very hard time calling a spade a spade. But I think that men are to be pitied in this to some extent, because women at times can be extremely vicious. And there might be nothing to the story at all. It may be completely fabricated. We're in a bit of a mess.
Yeah, thanks, Barbara.
Barbara raises a couple of good points, and it's interesting. We used to have in Canada the crime of rape, and we would have sexual touching, and we sort of had all these different categories. And now we've just clumped it all together in the 80s with what we call sexual assault. She's quite right. Mm-hmm. The allegation from John Turner of grabbing the woman on the bum, and I think it was video footage of that. It was very clearly it happened. That would technically be a sexual assault. And, you know, it includes also, you know, dragging a stranger into the bushes and raping them. It's quite broad how that term can be used. Mm-hmm. And it cuts both ways. It can undersell sometimes or underconvey sometimes what's happened to a woman. In that, you know, if it's a rape and we say, well, it's a sexual assault, we're not really sure what that means. But she was raped. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, people with convictions for sexual assault, for grabbing somebody on the bum, and before your listeners say that doesn't happen, it does. So the people are prosecuted for those sorts of things. It's strange because they don't, you know, it just shows up on their record as sexual assault. Now they're a registered sex offender. So it's one of the sort of policy considerations that we have. She's quite right, though. Unfortunately, the bedroom is a tough place sometimes. It's full of regret. It's full of confusion. It's full of mixed signals. And sometimes people can get caught up in situations where there's a misinterpretation of what's occurred, or there's regret over what happened last night. And if someone tells their friend that so-and-so, oh, I didn't really want to do it, he made me do it, and then that friend phones police, all of a sudden a ball starts rolling down the hill and it picks up snow, and it's pretty hard sometimes to kind of put a stop to that and say, look, you know, that's it, nothing happened. I did actually want to do that. So I want to hasten to add, there are many, many instances, though, where women are unbelievably treated and they're widely unreported.
Yeah. Paul, thanks for coming in. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Paul Pearson, Victoria criminal lawyer. News is next.